ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Rushing the gun from the five. Snap is back, looking left, fade, left side. Cooper! Touchdown! How about that?
Halloween fell on the eighth Sunday of this NFL season, a day that belonged to the backups. A bunch of dudes suddenly wearing the costume of an NFL starting quarterback and tricking pretty much everyone. So our QB1, Alex Smith, explains how Cooper Rush beat the Vikings and Trevor Siemian upset Tom Brady and someone named Mike White did the unthinkable and brought an entire fan base back from the dead. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, November 1st. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Oh my God. I mean, we're already recording. Alex Smith, I did not think you had this in you. I mean, for people who cannot see what I am seeing, and I'm staggered by what I am seeing. what are you?
The whole costume is even worse. I am White Goodman from Dodgeball. I am Ben Stiller's character, the ridiculous, full padded up Globo gym. You know, is it bad though that I got all dressed up and then my son comes up to me and says, "Dad, you look like Aaron Rodgers." I'm like, no, that's not how it works. Aaron looks like me. Okay.
I'm just mad that he got to that joke before I got to it.
Yeah,
I had
exactly.
So many NFL draft day jokes I was going to queue up and make that connection, but no, your middle child has already read the defense way earlier than me.
Yep.
And speaking of reading defenses, Alex, what we just saw today, I mean, this was the greatest day in the history of the backup quarterback, right? I mean, it all climaxes with Cooper Rush defeating the Minnesota Vikings. What did we just watch? What did this game tell you? How do you make sense of this?
Yeah, you know, I think you could be right. I didn't think about it that way, but, you know, that definitely capped it off tonight. Dak Prescott casts a very large shadow, especially given last year and what happened without him there. Here it is. They're you know, missing him for a game, you know, hopefully not more. And Cooper Rush stepping in, and I thought this offense still looked dynamic. I mean, they still put up over 400 yards on a really good defense. But I thought this was a big win for the Cowboys. I mean, backup quarterback on the road, every reason I feel like to lose. This is a game I feel like so often in the past they found a way to lose, and then to come up and to win it the way they did. Their defense continues to impress me. They're disruptive. They got a lot of guys flying around. I don't know if I've seen a transformation from one year to the next quite like them. And then, you know, to see Cooper Rush driving them down the field, a couple, you know, Amari Cooper obviously with a really nice catch, circus catch. But the play of the day that won the game, in my mind, was the 3rd and 11 check down to Ezekiel Elliott.
3rd and 11, snap to Rush. 4-man Rush, throws in the left flat, Elliott, 20, 15, breaks a tackle. 10, going, first down, stopped at the 4.
I mean, they're basically in field goal range. I felt like it was a give-up call. You know, 3rd and 11, there's about a minute left. Let's not do something stupid here. We got the field goal. Let's go to overtime. And they throw a little dump route to Ezekiel Elliott, and he runs through two guys and goes and gets a first down and then some, and they score the very next play.
Well, you called that play to Zeke a give-up call almost. This felt like going into this like a give-up game. Like the Cowboys were kind of making an almost NBA-style decision. Like we're going to protect our quarterback, load manage, preserve health, because this division is, quite frankly, trash. I mean, that's the NFC East right now. It feels like trash, Alex. And here comes Dallas winning this game with Cooper Rush. And as you look at the offense, you pointed it out. I mean, Amari Cooper, 122 yards. CeeDee Lamb, 112 yards. Cedric Wilson, 84. I mean, all of this stuff, the fact that they can do this without Dak is stunning. I'm curious, when you look at the other side of things now, at the Vikings, what does this game tell you about a team that probably should have won this thing going away?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. For one, I can't fault the Cowboys for being cautious with Dak right now. I'm not going to lie. I don't fault him. I thought the exact same thing. I mean, I watched his pregame workout on the field, and he looked pretty good. But I'm not sure it's worth the risk with the state of the division and obviously the year he's having. Why would you want any lingering effects from that? And decidedly, Cooper Rush looked good. He looked well prepared. He had taken the first team reps all week, every single one of them, and was definitely prepared for the moment. On the flip side, you know, the Vikings have been in a close game every single game this year. Like, I mean, I think you're guaranteed when the Vikings play, it's going to be a nail biter to the end. This is a game, though, I thought that, you know, with Dak not playing, they should have won, and they couldn't get it done. And I do think, I'm not sure if it says more about how for real the Cowboys are and that defense is really stepping up, or what it says about Minnesota not being able to seal off that victory. So I think only time will tell, but it was an entertaining game.
All right, so I got to ask you, Alex, about what happened to Tom Brady against the Saints, because I know that Tom Brady pretty much, he has nightmares against this team. This is a thing that we know about him now. He's thrown 5 picks in 3 games against the Saints coming in to this game. And in this one, he throws an interception. He loses a fumble in the first half. And the Bucs, they end up like making a game of it. But when you say to me that Tom Brady has the ball with less than 2 minutes left and a timeout and he's down 2 against anyone, I think that good things are happening. And instead, the opposite happens.
It's picked up, giving Brady time, and he's intercepted. P.J. Williams still going all the way. He's in. Touchdown, New Orleans.
So on that pick six, which ended this game, what was Tom Brady seeing, Alex?
You know, I think Tom has to do this every so often just to keep us believing that he's human and that he's not a cyborg, because he has been playing out of his mind this year. Like, I mean, the guy's 44 years old. I think he may be playing the best football of his career. But today, yeah, they scored, you know, when the Saints kicked that field goal to go up, and there's a minute 44, I think, and they're up by, you know, 1. I think I was thinking what the entire country was thinking, that there was way too much time for Tom Brady and the Bucs to get a field goal. And
yes,
boy, were we wrong. You know, 2 plays in and a pick six. Really uncharacteristic of Tom. I think he was obviously trying to hit Chris Godwin in front of the safety, you know, him flattening off on a deep cross, and P.J. Williams, I think it was, made a great play stepping in front and house calling. It was over. And this is what divisional football is all about. I think, you know, the Saints a little bit were the enigma in the NFL, the Jekyll and Hyde team of the league. You know, they crush Green Bay, and then they get pounded by the Panthers. And what kind of team are they? And I think we are slowly finding that they are for real. This defense they have is for real. I think they've kind of found their formula for winning, which is running the ball, being opportunistic in the passing game, playing great defense, and playing in the Superdome. I mean, it is one of the most hostile places to play, especially within the division. So great, great win for the Saints. I don't think this says much about Tom or the Bucs. I think they're still really, really good. I think they got everything they want in front of them. But again, I do think it says a lot about the Saints, and that they're a tough team. And when they're playing well, can compete with anybody. Hopefully Jameis is okay. He had to cook a really, really awkward hit and injured his knee, and hope the best for him.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Jameis here, Alex, because the Saints win this game, but they are the team that is plunged into far greater uncertainty, right? Yeah. I mean, Jameis Winston basically gets horse-collared. It's what it looked like, at least, by Devin White, the Bucs' excellent linebacker. And look, his left leg bends gruesomely. And I'm just curious, when you see a play like that, obviously given your injury history, but also just being a quarterback who knows how these things can go and how they maybe should be officiated or how these things are super, super dangerous in ways we don't fully appreciate. What did you make of that tackle? What did you make of that play?
Well, yeah, it's the reason horse collars, you know, are illegal. It's that exact reason, that kind of leverage on your shoulder pads that are hooked up high can really cause a lot of injuries. We've seen it over the years, broken fibulas, knee injuries just like this, especially on the turf. And I feel really bad for Jameis. He was playing really, really well up until that point. Yeah. You know, and in this entire year, I thought as a whole, it's been playing really well. And you just hate to see it. It is a side that, you know, obviously it's a risk there of football. And I do think, you know, it's funny looking on the other sidelines, a guy like Tom, who I think takes care of his body as good as anybody, if not better than anybody. But also there's a certain amount of luck that goes into that as well. Good fortune, you know, to avoid those kind of hits or you miss them just enough, you know, that the break does go your way and you do avoid injury. So hoping the best for Jameis. It's funny on this huge win, you know, big, big statement win, but a lot of unknowns at obviously a crucial position. So, but impressive that they could do it without him and Trevor Siemian stepping in and helping them seal off the victory.
Well, yeah, the Trevor Siemian end of this equation, Alex. I mean, he played so much better than I would have imagined when you tell me Trevor Siemian is now starting at quarterback for this team. And you wonder, okay, obviously Taysom Hill recovering from a concussion. He's in the mix at some point. Trevor Siemian now also in the conversation. But I wonder, you know, Cam Newton is the name that has already been bandied about because, of course, he is the number one free agent and he is the guy who maybe is just the ready-made dude that you plug into anywhere. But I'm curious, how easy is it actually to plug in anyone into a team midstream?
It's not easy. I mean, if it were basketball or baseball, it works, right? Pick a guy up from baseball because when you're in a batter's box, you're out there by yourself. It doesn't matter, right? If you played for the Blue Jays the week before, it doesn't matter if you play for the Giants the next week. That's not the same in football, especially as a quarterback. You really are the facilitator of the entire offense. So the only time I do think you ever see it happen with success is somebody that has history with that offensive coordinator. But this, I do think, hats off to not only Trevor Siemian for being ready to roll, but I think this is what goes into building good rosters. You know, when we talk about GMs and the personnel side and really having great depth, it's for times like this. And you said it. Taysom Hill's also hurt, who would have been their guy probably. So really they're down to their third string quarterback and he didn't blink. Came in and I agree with you, played really, really well given the circumstances. So great to see. But again, a lot of unknowns moving forward for New Orleans.
Yeah, the team, the offense that really seems to have very few questions surrounding them right now, Alex, would be the Rams. I mean, they play the Texans. That should be a layup win. It was a layup win by all accounts here. But I want to ask you about what Matt Stafford, their quarterback, has going with Cooper Kupp right now.
Stafford from the gun, looking right, throwing, end zone. Cooper Kupp's got it. Touchdown, LA!
Because they shredded the Houston defense. That's not the surprise. The surprise is when I looked at what their statistics look like. Stafford has thrown 22 touchdowns. That's as prolific a passer has ever been through the first 8 games with a team. Cooper Kupp is now the 5th wideout in NFL history with 900 yards and 10 touchdowns through his team's first 8 games. He is on pace to be within a yard of breaking the single season receiving record, right? I mean, this is more than I bargained for. What makes this relationship between Stafford and Kupp work so well? Why is it so wildly profitable?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot there. Certainly, I think when you talk about Stafford and the pace he's on for the first 8 games of a, you know, to start with a new team, it makes sense, right? I mean, here's a guy that's in his prime, gets traded to Sean McVay and the Rams, a team that a few years ago was in the Super Bowl, an offensive, obviously, guru. And it's good to see it working. You know, they took a gamble. They were aggressive, went out and got Matthew, and it's paid off thus far. And it's fun to see. I think it's been good for football certainly good for that division and that team. Cooper Kupp, though, is a guy that I think, it's hard to put a finger on why he's been so successful. And I think it's exactly that when I really do think about it. It's the fact that he does everything really well. He's not a slot receiver. He's not a guy that only plays outside the numbers, right? I mean, he's a guy that you can move around. I think he's good at a little bit of everything. He's a gifted route runner. I think he's got enough skills that he can, you know, in speed that he can still be a downfield threat, a deep ball threat. And we see that week in and week out. And then I think also he's the recipient of having a lot of good other players around him as well, right? You can't just take away Cooper Kupp. And I think we've seen that when we've had great receivers on other teams that are really limited. They can take one player away. Well, when you play the Rams, they got a ton of good players. So it's hard to really take him away. And again, they run the ball so well on top of it. It's kind of pick your poison. So fun to see. I on a side note, I do have him on my fantasy team, which has been absolutely amazing. Should rename my team after him. So I'm hoping they keep it going.
Yeah, if you're at a points per reception league, man, this is just, I mean, also, Alex, I the fact that you're still dressed like Ben Stiller's character, we need to go to break. I have more questions, and I'm going to try and not laugh at the fact that every time you talk, your mustache keeps bouncing.
Keeps moving. All right.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, Alex. So we covered the NFC. I want to get to the AFC with you because the Justin Herbert conundrum, as I am now going to call it with you here. This is a guy who looked like an MVP candidate not so long ago, but against the Patriots, he barely completes half his passes. He throws two interceptions. Yep. He has a pick six of his own in the fourth quarter. He also has one of those. Is this about Belichick's game plan to you? What did the New England defense do to discombobulate Justin Herbert like this?
I was definitely shocked to see this as well. I felt like the Patriots definitely have been trending in the right direction. And again, they were hard for me to read. On top of that, you know, when you look at their wins, they beat the Jets twice and they beat the Texans, but they've also gone toe to toe with the Bucks, and they went toe to toe with the Cowboys. So they've played well and on the biggest stage. So it was really hard for me kind of to know how good they were. I think in typical Patriot fashion, they just continue to get better. Like as the weeks go on, they get better. And that's dangerous to say, cause I think the AFC is wide open right now.
Yes.
I mean, you could pick eight teams at this point, I think, that have a chance to win the AFC, which is bananas. And the Patriots, like I said, I think they're trending. They keep getting better. This is certainly their biggest win of the year.
Yes.
They beat a Chargers team coming off of a bye, one of the best young quarterbacks in the league, and they shut them down. And Belichick has this knack, this especially from a defensive game plan standpoint. Like, they're so hard to get a beat on. You know, what you anticipate them coming into – they never seem to play it. You know, they change their persona week in, week out, and they're so hard to prepare for. They give you so many problems. And you saw that today. They really made Justin Herbert uncomfortable. He wasn't sure what he was seeing, or he felt this was the most indecisive he's been back there in the pocket. And then the pick six to seal it off.
Herbert. Intercepted. Picked off. Phillips running down the sideline, and he's in. Touchdown, New England.
Yeah, it was certainly characteristic of the entire day for them. And that's just what they do. And he's obviously why he's maybe the greatest coach of all time.
Yeah, so I'm looking through the AFC standings right now, and the Patriots now 4-4, the Chargers now 4-3. There are a bunch of two-loss teams at the tops of their divisions. And the one I want to talk to you about here is the Tennessee Titans, who just beat the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, Carson Wentz has been a conundrum for a long time.
Yep.
I mean, let's just recap briefly how this went, because they get out, the Colts do, to a 14-0 lead over the Titans. Titans come back. Carson Wentz makes a play that seems like it's going to be over for the Colts. He throws an interception.
Yep.
He leads them back down the field, forces overtime, and you're thinking, okay, the pendulum swung the other direction, and then the pendulum swings back because he throws another interception, Alex. This one sets up the game winner, the field goal for Tennessee. I am at a loss as to how I should be thinking about Carson Wentz. What do you see when you watch him? Help me make sense of him.
Well, if there was one game that I think personified Carson Wentz's style and his brief career at this point, it was like all encapsulated in this one game.
Yes.
Like you said, I mean, they jumped out to a big lead. He's playing well. They're another team that's been trending really well lately. I think the Colts are playing really good football. You know, he showed a lot of the flashes why he, you know, I think is who he is, right? I mean, it's this big, strong guy, can make plays, is athletic, got a big arm. And then with the game on the line, it's tied. He's scrambling around in his own end zone. And to avoid being sacked, throws a ball left-handed, kind of shot put.
Wentz faking the handoff. Boy, under pressure. Barely gets it. Oh, no. It's intercepted. Disaster for Indianapolis.
I mean, there's not another guy in the league that I think throws an interception like that.
No.
And you're like, oh, my God, here it is. He just lost the game for his team. And like you said, no, he brings them back. I mean, they score with under a minute. Come back and they tie it up and send it to overtime. And, you know, he's got a chance here to pull off a big win, and then forces a completely unnecessary ball.
Wentz faking, delivering it. It is picked. Intercepted by Byard.
Gives, obviously, the Titans great field position. They kick the field goal at the game winner. But I have not given up on Carson Wentz. Before this game today, he had only thrown one interception. And it was the one we brought up, the goofy shovel pass.
That's right. That's right.
That was his only interception so far this year. So he really has played a lot better under Frank Reich. I really think this is a great marriage for him. It's a great spot for him to be today. We saw, though, why he is so polarizing as a quarterback. I mean, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it was all there in one game.
Alex, I just love that you, Alex Smith, you played almost the exact opposite way that Carson Wentz has played, right? Like the idea that you, I mean, it's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off. Yeah, I mean, that's my
exactly
thought,
right?
thinking about how you are still stockholding. You are still holding stock in Carson Wentz. But this brings up the other question about, like, the Tennessee Titans, right? Because he played and lost to a team that I also have questions about. This is a team that I had faith in, then written off, and now I think I'm like, I should be really respecting. Where are we with the 6-2 Tennessee Titans right now?
Oh, they're a good football team. I think they're a really good football team. I think they're the team the most that, like, epitomizes the personality of their head coach. They're just like a gritty, tough football team. Like I don't think they'll ever back away from a game, from a fight, from a competition. They're not afraid to you know, whatever it takes to win. Old school, throw it around, trick plays, like, get creative. I think Vrabel's got these guys in a good position. I don't think anybody really wants to play this Titans team. You're going to be in for a long day. They didn't run the ball that well today. They were missing Julio Jones, but you know, A.J. Brown went off. Tannehill makes a ton of plays. I think he's incredibly underrated. And they're good up front. Their O&D lines at this point, I think, can get after it. And I think it's starting to show. And so they do, I think, get better as the weeks go on. They certainly have so far this year. And again, the AFC, I think, is wide open. I don't think there's anybody out in front. And they're right there with the rest of the conference.
Okay, so the team that we have to end on here is the team that really is the story of the day, because the New York Jets, Alex Smith, they beat the Cincinnati Bengals. To prove your point about just the utter pandemonium of the AFC, they beat the Bengals 34-31, and they do it with their quarterback being a guy named Mike White.
Takes the snap, drops back, looks right, looks left, fires in the back of the end zone! Is Croft. He's got it. That's a
Jet touchdown! Mike White finds him for the go-ahead score! Unbelievable!
And the legend of Mike White now is it's a song that will be sung from mountain to mountaintop in New York State. But the fact is, he throws for 3 touchdowns, 405 yards, the second most yards by a quarterback in his first career start since 1950. How was he so successful here?
And it's crazy. I didn't know that stat. I know he's the first Jet to throw for like 400 yards since Vinny Testaverde. I mean, really, really impressive by the Jets, by Mike White, I think, being prepared. For me, it does make me think about this whole concept of just throwing Zach Wilson out there, you know, of just, hey, we're going to play this young guy, obviously extremely talented. We've made a huge investment in with the second overall pick, but we're just going to throw him out there and he's going to take his lumps and play through it, and somehow he's going to come out better for it. I don't know that that is always the best thing to do, the right thing to do. And I don't know that that logic is right in every situation. And here you are, you know, a guy that hasn't played. It's his first career start. Mike White's been on practice squad for the 2 years prior to this, but obviously ready for the situation. You can still, you know, obviously prepare yourself and grow and get yourself caught up to speed with the pro game. And he throws for 400 yards, beats what we all thought was the best team in the AFC going into
today. Insane. No, I mean, this is, the Bengals were the cream of this conference as of 8 hours ago.
Yep. And so, I mean, and, you know, it does make me, that's when I came away with it. Like, well, why not? Why wasn't he potentially playing even going into this? And what's wrong with letting Zach sit and watch and get ready and, you know, this concept of throwing him out there and letting him take his lumps. Well, he did, and now he's hurt, and I'm not sure it did him any good.
At the halfway
mark. But again, to go back to today, hats off to Mike White. I mean, first career start, 400 yards. What a game. I mean, he had the 2 interceptions, but he also completed like over 80% of his passes. I mean, it was
his second
outrageous.
14 of 16 in the second half. He like hit 10 different receivers.
Yeah.
I don't know who saw this coming, but it feels like the Jets shouldn't have been as surprised as we were, maybe.
No, and they certainly, it was so fun to see them enjoy the win. I mean, because it was back and forth in the fourth quarter, and they made the plays down the line to win it. And they hit for the 2-point conversion there. They ran the little trickery play, threw it back to Mike White for it.
Hand off to Moore, back to Crowder. They got the 2 to the quarterback, White!
They Philly specialed. They Philly specialed Mike bleeping White.
Yeah, it was so good to just see him enjoying a win, right? I mean, again, everybody puts in so much, and to lose and lose and lose sucks. And to see him get a big win like that versus, like, you know, the Cinderellas of the AFC for this last week. I mean, this is 3 weeks in a row where I think the best team in the AFC has lost. You know, 3 weeks ago the Bills, then the Ravens. Now the Bengals, so through the AFC back into disarray, which will be fun. I think it's going to make for great football.
Yeah, so Mike White goes from a preemptive punchline. I was already like scripting jokes about this game to a guy who might, we have a mayoral election on Tuesday, Alex. If he ran, he would win right now. I mean, the locker room after the game, it felt like a college team. It felt like that kind of spirit.
I just got one freaking game ball. 405 yards passing, 3 touchdowns.
I really appreciate everybody in this room for not flinching and trusting in me and all my teammates. We just did out there and executed. That's all.
And the other locker room now, with the Bengals, I mean, they get the Browns, Raiders, Steelers, Chargers in their next 4 games. If you're advising Bengals fans emotionally here, what are you telling them? How should they be feeling right now?
Oh, I still high on the Bengals and Joe Burrow. I mean, talk about letdown game, you know, letdown week.
And psychologically, Alex, that's real. I mean, just explain to me, just like, it is a matter of actually like everybody kind of buying into the fact that the Jets are kind of a joke, right?
Yeah. And the other way, everybody's telling you how great you are, and everybody, I mean, your parents, your brothers and sisters, your friends, the media, like everybody's telling you how great you are. Yeah, you're playing the Jets who, you know, if you believed it, right? Like they can't win a game. But obviously they got really good players too. And that's the amazing thing about the NFL. But I think there can be a learning experience from this for the Bengals. I mean, they're a young team that hasn't seen the spotlight yet in a long time. Certainly a lot of these guys have never seen the spotlight. So I think to get a glimpse of it and to realize, you know, what it can do, the you know, for mindset, expectations, certainly them drinking their own Kool-Aid, it can be a learning experience for them going forward, especially if they do make the playoffs, right, and get in the tournament.
So, look, I have out of all of this chaos, Alex, I have this list of victorious quarterbacks I'm looking at on my computer screen right now, right next to your giant bobbing mustache. and I want to read these names. It is Mike White. It is Geno Smith. It is Sam Darnold. It is Trevor Siemian. It is Teddy Bridgewater. And I assume you know what all of these victorious quarterbacks that I have in common.
I don't. What's that?
Oh, Alex. Nobody makes current and former New York Jet quarterbacks.
Oh, there we go.
No one makes them bleed their own blood.
Do you know the five D's?
Alex, I feel like if you don't tell me them, we've really failed at the entire point of this podcast.
Dodge, dive, dip, duck, and dodge, Pablo. Five D's.
Alex Smith / White Goodman / Aaron Rodgers. Thank you as always for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Pablo. Happy Halloween.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.